Blog Talk Radio. Hello, this is American Health Crisis through Blog Talk Radio. This is Paulette Young, your host, joined by Selena Lindsay, is also a host, and Art Hobart is going to be on today. Who is he? And since 2017, his sole focus has been to introduce men and their family members to their father and having bringing CORE 300, transforming training and holistic solution to the undeserved in developing nations. His belief that men are the key to either great evil or great good. So join us tonight. I'm your host, Paulette Young, along with Selena Lindsay. Art comes with a long background. He has a California registered 501c3 nonprofit corporation, principle-based leadership, a Kenya-based NGO, training and humanitarian organization. His calling was clarified when he had a life-changing dream in 1978, where Father God invited him to follow him as a father to the fatherless. Since that time, he followed a zigzag pathway, including both business, pastoral ministry, and ultimately to found CORE 300 in 2010. Mr. Hobart's background includes several senior management roles, strategic management consulting services, where Art has been effective in raising the bar through implementing company-wide cultural transformation. So what I'm going to do right now is let Art begin to talk. Okay, Art. Oh, and I want
great.
To say
thank you so much, Paulette.
Yes, you're welcome.
It's great to be here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yes, I can hear
great.
You.
Thank you for the opportunity to just share our story and to have some hopefully meaningful dialogue. For the last 10 years, we've been, God kind of brought us to, at least for me and the environment that I was raised in here in Southern California, brought us to focus in, like he did with Moses, in the backside of the desert. And we were invited in 2012 to lead a pastor's conference in Bungoma, Kenya, which is on the western side. It's a good 12-hour drive from Nairobi. Most everyone's heard of Nairobi. Many have been there for one or more reasons. But Bungoma's right kind of the hub of 50 or 60,000 people surrounded by farmland. And it's rich in its rain and its soils, poor in its education and what we would call modern resources and services. Well, I didn't know that when we were invited there. I had to, after we were invited in late 2012, I knew Kenya was in Africa, but I didn't know where. And I didn't even check where Bungoma was until I had to book the tickets. Having no experience with missions, having no experience in Africa, four of us got on a plane by faith and with hearts full and of expectations and hope to be able to bring this message that we had been bringing to American churches for some years. And the message is calling a man out of the stands into the arena that God has made for them. And every man, every child, every girl, every woman, when they come into being in God's mind and heart, there's an associated hope and plan that he has for that. All of his creation is clearly mapped out into the purposes and the ongoing procreation, and the entire environment of the earth, as well as the entire universe, is like a ticking clock. God doesn't make junk. God thinks through what he has ordained for your purpose-driven life and for my purpose-driven life and for that of our children and our children's children. And so we went there with a message called The Warrior. The Warrior is a course that God kind of gave me in 2008 when I was serving at church here locally in a mega church in Southern California. And we have gone on some rough times. The senior pastor had fallen into immorality with a few women, and the people were shocked, and we had drifted from 4,000 attendance down to 2,000. There was some confusion. There was some sadness. The income was going down. And some of the men in the church rallied together and said, we got to stop this. We got to do what we can. And we began praying. And we prayed weekly for about 6 months. And then I was studying my Bible, and I had a past of about 15 years in pastoral ministry in the 80s and 90s. Before that and after that, my focus was business. And so at the time, then this happened in 2008, I was a management consultant helping companies figure out their culture and then trying to fix the culture so that people rose to their highest and best. And wouldn't you know it, that God used my corporate training and the biblical training, and then soon later invited us to go and do a pastor's conference in Kenya. And what happened is that 610 pastors and bishops showed up. Some prison chaplains were there as well. And the Spirit of God just fell. I began doing the exact same teaching with the exact same materials in English with an interpreter about a man named Gideon. Now, Gideon's one of the more central characters in the Bible, and yet not many people really know about what he did and what he started out as. So here's a guy in his late 20s. He's we know he has at least one child, and he's about 11 or 12-year-old boy, so he probably has a few other kids, as Jewish families did in that day, as all families did in that day. The year's around 1100 B.C., and for 7 years, this Bedouin group of sand pirates called the Midianites have been sweeping through all of his country, Israel. And God had allowed these Midianites to come and steal everything that wasn't nailed down. This had happened 7 years in a row, and the people were still had not turned and repented and turned back to God in pure worship, in good behavior, and doing good works. And so the Midianites were preparing to come in again, and here's Gideon. He had learned how to work under the oppression of an extremely difficult economy, where every time there was a harvest, once a year, the Midianites knew what that was, and they would come and steal not only all of the produce of what they had worked for the year prior, but all of their hope. And the despair that they left behind happened year after year after year. So this young man, his father, by the way, happens to be the witch doctor for the entire community. He was the high priest of Baal. And so there's shame on that part because his dad had to sacrifice firstborn children. Each family had to give a firstborn child as membership fee to become a part of that Baal worship cult. And it was the most popular god at the time, more popular than the Jewish god Yahweh. And so Gideon is now hiding. He's hiding in a wine press. So he's keeping his head down. He says he was hiding because he didn't want the Midianites to watch him because he was making wheat the last couple of days before the Midianites came across. And he was going to hide this in certain holes in the ground so his family, after the Midianites left, that he'd be able to feed his family with some meager nutrition. And in that moment, this being shows up, and he at first thinks it's kind of a stranger or a wanderer from another tribe, maybe far away. And he starts a dialogue, but the first thing that this being says, he goes, "Hail, mighty warrior." And so when you're in an agrarian community, when you're in a community where men have very little hope, and I'm oftentimes thinking of even in many of our inner cities. But in Kenya and Uganda, where we are doing a lot of work, where we've trained about 35,000 ministers and another 10,000 inmates in the same exact program as we taught here in Southern California, because men are men. And the men see this man Gideon, because, you know, men, we're isolated. We're alone. And Gideon was alone in this wine press trying to make a buck So he had a little bit to give to his family. Does that sound familiar to some of you? And this angel shows up and says, you're not a scrapper. You're not impoverished. I see you as a mighty warrior, which other than saying a king, it was the highest title that could ever be given to a man in that day. And is also called a mighty man of valor in other places in scripture. But this is the first time we have a record of this being in the scriptures calling another man a mighty warrior. This is before David, before Samson. And so God shows up, and it turns out to be God. And essentially an agreement happens, and they engage one another. And Gideon puts his trust in this being that says, if you follow me, if you do what I say, you're going to become far above the wildest dream you ever had. You're going to become a real man, an authentic man, and you're going to lead your family into prosperity. You're not only going to do that, you're going to become a leader in your community. And when we bring men together, and there's been tens and tens of thousands that have gone through this same experience, they lighten up. Their eyes, their heads lift up. It's like a death of sorts or a sleep washes away from their heads. And they engage God at a whole new level as a man. And then we put the men together in groups of three throughout the entire coursework. And so this troika allows them to share their own weaknesses together and then pray for one another. And they stay in the same troika with the same two other guys for the whole conference. And magic happens there because every man is really looking for, give me a place where I can be myself and people will love me for who I am. You know, a lot of man, and this starts when we're boys, and I'm sure that there's a whole side of this for women and girls as well, but men are not as social naturally. You know, when a woman and a woman stand together talking in church or in the community, they're facing each other face to face, 180 to 180. But you get another guy standing with another guy, and we're at 45 degree angles with each other. We're always kind of guarded just in case subconsciously we need to get our fists up. And we're putting forth a charade of sorts of what I call false armor. I want you to see the masculinity that I practiced as an avatar, but it's not really who I am. No one gets to know who I really am. And so in this course, the men in these groups of three get to know and be loved by each other because every man is afraid, every man is alone, and everyone is hiding. But we're looking for a safe place where we can come out and say, will you be my brother? And so that's kind of our introduction and what's been going on in Kenya. And it's been transforming not just the men. It's transforming their marriages. It's transforming their families. And it's transforming the individual economy of these husbands and fathers that go back home, a changed man.
Wow. That's a lot. And you, what year did you bring the program over to Kenya?
2013, Paulette.
Oh, 2013. And
yeah.
Do you have numbers of how many people have actually been transformed, or families, or men?
Well, you know, we've done surveys. We have a wife survey that's really, we just introduced the survey in 2019 because we kept hearing these testimonies of, for example, it's somewhere in the area, and I only have expertise on the ground in Kenya and Uganda, but I'm told by other men from Sierra Leone, from South Africa, from the Congo, from Ethiopia, that it's very, very common for a man to regularly beat his wife. And you go, are they that angry? What kind of barbaric patriarchy is that? What kind of misogyny is that? But you see, there's this wicked, shame-based, fear-based, primeval system. Now, I'm not talking about some of the beauty of their culture. Now, there's some beautiful things about the culture of the children and of the parents and of the family that I've been a student of, and I've been impressed by and somehow sometimes emulated back with my own family. But by and large, there's a code You know, you heard about the Marines have a code. The cops have a code. The athletes on this team have a code. You know, and you see them leaving the locker room and they're banging the same thing, that emblem of their mascot on the way out for luck. Men are attracted to codes, but the codes can be corrupted. The codes, after tens of thousands of years, have put a man in the position of such power and created a norm that if I've talked with wives of friends of mine, and the wives are my friends now because we've trained so many. Within our own team, we have about 100 men that are certified, and they're out doing all this teaching. I'm not doing the teaching. I go and I coach them and encourage them and continue to develop them as they're spreading this throughout those two nations right now. But when I talk with them, the wives are saying, you know, when my husband stopped beating me, I thought there was something wrong with me. Because
wow,
every man's wife is beaten, and it becomes a sick kind of a status symbol that your husband's a real man. But when you bring the Gideon story and the surrounding messages of Jesus to these men, and the sleep and the slumber as it peeled back from their minds and their eyes, and you can tear down that tribal code, which, by the way, we never did that intentionally. Remember, I said it was the same course that we had taught in the United States to many, many men in many churches. But somehow in that world, these men seized upon that and said, I can be free from the code that tells me I have to be a wife beater to be a man. Because if I don't beat my wife often enough, and if it doesn't show, even show on her body from time to time, the men in our tribe won't do business with me. I will be exiled. I will become an outcast. And the tribal system is built on that leverage of power to be outcast. We see it in the days of Jesus throughout in the Jewish temple, where the Pharisees, if you stepped on the wrong toes in the Pharisees and you didn't behave a certain way, they put you out of the synagogue. You were done with business. You didn't have a home anymore. And that fear of being exiled, of being rejected by the tribe, well, a lot of us felt it in junior high school, right? I mean, the things I did, the words I used when I was in junior high, I was like, man, I got to fit in here or I'm going to die. Well, that's what tribalism is in its practice. And we got to remember that 75% of the world is in a tribal system of some sort right now. And I'm not even talking about modern political tribalism, right? I'm just talking about existing primeval tribal systems that are in control of people's behaviors. And it brings great sorrow. It brings great injustice. And it the thing that moves me the most is that it's responsible for most of the fatherlessness in the world today.
Wow. So you're telling me that in Kenya, the women felt it was normal to be beat?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was expected. They saw their father beating their mother. Let's just step back here for a moment, and you're watching a village, and you hear a woman crying out, and you see maybe through the glass beads in the window in this 10 by 12 hut with a dirt floor, the children are there. And so when domestic violence happens, we know psychologically that trauma happens with children, not to mention the one who's being beaten. And we also know sometimes those women are whacking on their man too, but not in Kenya or not in Uganda. And I'm speaking now for what I've been learning through other agents that are looking at our program for their nations as well in sub-Saharan Africa. And so I know that the women, when the husbands come home changed and smiling and many times weeping, which is also forbidden in the tribe, a man can't weep. These men are breaking out, they're weeping together in these groups of three. They're so joyful. And also sorrowful for the life they've lived, and they're breaking free. And so they go home and they confess to their wives, I'll never beat you again. And here's the thing. We've measured 415 wives surveys that were confidential, and we've asked them 5 Raider statements. I can mention those Raider statements if you'd like me to, but I just want to mention one thing. 99.8% of those wives, their husbands never beat them again. And that's 415 wives surveys. Not a single one beat their wife again. I shouldn't say not a single one. It's 99.8%. So there was a one or two in that population. And we're gathering more and more data because there's a lot of women that are looking for that kind of freedom in the world. And there's a lot of children that are being traumatized by a man who himself is traumatized by his own wickedness. These men want to be free more than anything in the world, but no one has given them a flashlight to get out of the darkness. And God's made this program somehow a way out. And they're and the thing is, we don't teach them. We just introduce them to Jesus, who says, I want to empower you. I want to make you strong. I want to make you humble. I want to bathe you in my mercy. And you know, once you've been washed in the mercy of God from all of the darkness that's going on in your life, it's something just tender that happens to you. And they go home and they love on their wives. They're working on the, they don't say the words, I love you, in an African home. Men don't say, I love you. Women don't say, I love you. It's kind of an understanding, but if a man says it, again, he's classified as effeminate. Here is the most destructive of all, because it's transgenerational, from generation to generation to generation for a thousand generations. If I'm an African man, no matter if all of the tribes have these things in common, the wife beating in common, the all of the weight and the burden of childbearing is on the woman. That's in common. The man does not get involved in childbearing or child education or anything. But the father, I was with 12 bishops, 12 of the top 40 ranking bishops in Nairobi. So these are city churches. And these bishops, I'd say, they averaged about 60 years old, and I was about the same age. And they were putting on a conference for our organization, and it was the night before, and they were meeting and having a nice dinner and doing introductions. So one at a time, they're all dressed in suits. I just got off the plane. Of course, they didn't tell me about this meeting, so I'm in my sweatpants. These guys are all dressed up. And I'm the only white face in the entire hotel, which is fine. That doesn't bother me. But they said, well, okay, let's call this meeting to order. And they made it very formal. And one at a time, they stood up and they told me their name, what town they were born in, what county they were from, and the names of their wives and the names and ages of their children. Well, they didn't exactly do the ages. They did the ranking of birth order, you know, firstborn, secondborn, thirdborn, which is very common. And so they stood up, okay, and so they mentioned the first name of their child and birth order and sat out. And I'm just completely clueless as to what's going on. I'm thinking this is very nice that they prepared all this. And they went all the way around the circle, all 12 of them, and they all of them remembered the name of their children. Of course, we would know the name of our children, right? Well, when the last guy sat down, they all looked at each other with big smiles, and they laughed, and they clapped for each other. They applauded each other. And I knew it was a personal joke of some sort, but I was on the outside. They said, Art, we just wanted to tell you that it's very rare for an African man to ever learn the name of his children. But we knew that you Americans do know the names of your children, and you count that as something very, very foundational. And so we all made an agreement that before we met you for dinner, we would all go and memorize the names and the birth order of our children so that we can introduce them to you.
Wow.
And it hit me. It hit me. That
wow.
if I'm a father, you know, when Jesus was baptized in water, there was this affirming voice that came out of heaven. And he said, "Behold my son in whom I'm well pleased." And there was that, the father's voice, the father, that low voice, the father's voice spoken to a child. And when the father speaks the name of a child, it's the first stage of a father-child bond that occurs. And it hit me, and it broke my heart. It broke me into tears that all of these men, when they were boys, they never heard their dad say their name. Well, later on, when they were older, when they were, you know, past teenage years, they did. But these children walking around, the father didn't talk to them. There was never a touch, never bonding. There was never holding. There was never roughhousing. There was never a father. He was there, but he wasn't there. And then I learned that the father doesn't have meals with the family. He wants a separate meal. He stays, he's all day, gone all day long, and he comes home late at night when the kids are down. He leaves before the kids are up. And so you've got a massive high percentage of these families that we will go and visit sometimes on a missions trips, or we'll see them when we go on a safari or whatever in our travels, and we see these nicely dressed pastors come out with their nicely dressed wives with their beautiful hair braids, and they're smiling and all, but we don't know that that man and woman you're looking at never had a daddy that said their name. And you've got this spirit of rejection, or it's like abandonment, but he's still there, but he's not there. So they're not present. And so one of the things that God had called me to when I was 27 in this dream was this vivid, painful dream that he had called me to be an advocate as a father to the fatherless. You know, there's only one father of the fatherless, and he's our Father God. But he wants to engage other men to say, let me step up and play that role here. And we have some great secular and ministry examples of this. I remember Big Brothers, for example. There's just an older man with a young kid just speaking life, speaking that low voice, calling them by name, showing him interest, listening to their stories. And that's really a lot of the essence of fatherhood, teaching them how to live, teaching a boy what it's like to be a man. And I've grieved about ever since this calling happened. It happened in downtown L.A., in my dream, I was in downtown L.A. on Spring Street, though I was in my home further away. And there's something about Los Angeles. There's something about our inner cities where you have angry men filling our prisons that were never validated by a man who was there in the morning and there in the evening. There, the preponderance of the absentee father has become a mark and a plague and a bane of many African-American families, particularly the ones in urban communities. And one of my hopes is that as we gather this data, I'd love to partner with some men that share this burden. And I've talked with some African-American brothers, and they share this burden. We'd love to make this curricula that we have that is working so powerfully available to both the prisons, because we're doing a lot of prison work in Kenya as well. We trained about 9,000 prisoners in the same material with the same results, by the way. And so that's why I'm at this FFCA conference, is to come out and provide statistics and share some of the stories and videos of what's going on in these families. It's just absolutely remarkable.
Wow. So the same program that you're doing in Kenya, you're doing it here in California?
Well, yeah, actually we started in California, but we never got into some of the, you know, it was primarily a kind of a baby boomer slash older millennial effort. in churches all across the country. Primarily, most of them were white. And it had a strong impact upon the men, not too similar from what was happening in these men. But just in my heart, you know, there's an authentic voice that God has given me in Kenya and Uganda, and that's a very, 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 very dark-skinned culture, and I love it. But there are men who I'd like to find and meet within our community here, particularly in Southern California or in any of our urban cities, to say, hey, let's talk about your curriculum. How might I be able to come and bring it in to my village, to bring it in to my church, bring it into the prison system, and see if we can bring some of the same power and healing into these lives. And the thing is, it's sustainable. We've been measuring this now for 8 years, going back 8 years, and these families are still in that position. The man hasn't gone rogue. He hasn't given up. He hasn't lost his steam. They're increasing their income threefold, fourfold, by working the farmland harder and smarter, and we're helping them with 21st century farming and helping them with nutrition and other disease prevention and all those other holistic things, because these men want to learn and their wives want to learn, and it's a real honor and privilege to be able to be assigned there, and I go 2 or 3 times a year, but yeah, love to have something that I'd love to meet some men and women that have activity and access here, and they built their own, already built trust and reliability, and to offer what we're doing as a part of a curriculum to train these men.
Well, in the beginning of your training, do you get a lot of resistance, or they're ready to go?
I'd say first of all, this is a guy's thing. So we start out with a film clip from the movie Gladiator. and the very first thing we're trying to show is that the reason why men are isolated and alone is because they're isolated and alone. And, the Ecclesiastes chapter 4 says, if a man stands alone, he's a fool. He's going to go down. But that two are better than one, then they can stand back to back and fight together and fight off a pretty good sized group of people. They've tripled or quadrupled their power together. If they lie together, they can be warm and not going to freeze to death. And they have a multiple return for their labor. And then it says in the final part of Ecclesiastes 4, and a threefold cord is not easily broken. So you wrap and braid that, and it's so much more powerful, the lifting, the kind of loads that we all have to lift in life. It's in the community, and that's why we just decided to go with this group of three men. And we go right into practicing it. So we show this film clip, and what it is, it's the Roman warriors, the gladiators, who we've been following their story so far. And many, if you're ladies, you may not have seen this, but if you're guys, you probably did see this. It's one of the top 5 most popular films for men in the world today, still. But essentially, they go into the big Colosseum, and there's about 15 of these warriors in Roman outfits with their great big square shields. And it was all a setup that was done by Caesar to have all of these Roman soldiers killed for entertainment by a bunch of surprises coming out of the walls. Long story short, one of the men who was the star of the film, Maximus, was a trained general, and he had the men bring their shields together, and when they locked their shields together, they weren't only protected from the arrows and from the spears, but they were able to use the shields like a tank and destroy those who were there to destroy them. And that's a good 7-minute clip, and when the guys watched that, I asked the question, I said, which of the guys that lived? Which are the guys that died? The guys that did not get in the circle and work together and protect one another are the ones that died. And about half of them died. And so we start right there. You need each other. And they begin talking with one another. And we create a troika, Get your names. What's your biggest challenge? Share with the guy next to you, what is your most painful memory of your father, if you had one? What's the greatest memory you ever had? We start digging into the scriptures and talk about Father God, and the spirit of adoption is waiting for them to receive the healing of their father wound. If a man is not affirmed by another man, he's father wounded. And sometimes it can happen with a coach, right? Maybe some of you have seen that happen. A coach, or sometimes a school teacher, or a neighbor, or a grandfather, or obviously the most ideal would be the dad. And we don't have a whole nation here of deadbeat dads. We do have some afflicted areas where the percentages, I believe, after all of the billions of dollars that have been thrown at them by government, they can't fix it, can they? They can't fix it. Because they don't know how to break the skin and get into the wound that's in the heart. And this story of Gideon gets to that wound and it heals them. And now they're able to go and be transformed. That's all we can do. We're measuring transformation. So of the five things, let me read them to you real quick. So just pretend you got a sheet of paper in front of you, ladies, and your husband had just gone through this course, or maybe your son had just gone through this course, and you've observed him and seen changes in him, and now it's 2 or 3 months later, and you're sitting down, and you get to score on a scale of five being very good or very much improved, and one being worse than ever. Okay, so here's the statements. After my husband completed the warrior course, our marriage, much better, about the same, a little worse, much worse. After my husband completed the warrior course, he has never hurt or beaten me since. He rarely abuses or beats me. He abuses and beats me about the same. He beats me a little more than he used to, and he beats me more. And on that particular one, everyone but one scored a five. And when we did it for the same group 4 years later, it was still the same. These men are changed.
Wow.
It's not a men's retreat weekend. This is making systemic changes deep in the soul of a man, because the deepest wound that we have is the wound that that says, "Where's my daddy?" And here's the next one. After my husband completed the warrior course, he is much more caring for our children. He is more caring for our children. He's the same, and on and on. The fourth one. After my husband completed the warrior course, he helps much more with labor around our home. He helps more with labor around our home. And the final one, after my husband completed the warrior course, he's much more responsible as our provider. He is more responsible as our provider, all the way down. And so the average better and much better scores so far is 95.4%. Better or much better in those five Raider statements. And I believe that from a sociological standpoint, from a psychological standpoint, we're witnessing a transformation of a man. And for them, these men go through this because of travel and the change of their harvest and such, that they do this in 3 full days. The pastor, these are pastors now, most of them going through this, and they take it home. And then it begins to overflow into their teaching and into their ministry. So we're seeding the populations to bring about this ongoing transformation. And I think that model would have some application in some of our urban areas as well.
Wow.
Are there any questions so far?
You know, the women, that's what I'm looking at. After being beat, now they have an environment where they're not touched or beat. How do they treat the men? with this new transformation of theirs?
Well, that's a great question, because here's the deal. And I can't answer for the urban community women. I see them crying on TV. I see they lost a son. They lost a brother. They lost a husband. And I grieve for those things. But I know that within the general American culture, there's a lot of bitter, angry women. And in Africa, there's very few. The women in Africa are mourning. They are grieving because they don't have a man. In the last 10 years, and a lot of this has been in the infliction of big NGOs like the Gates Foundation, for example, they're making the situation so much worse. And we can get into that maybe if we have a little time later, but the women are carrying the burden. They're doing it. You know, these are just agreed upon cultural facts. 80% of the labor that is done in sub-Saharan Africa, the labor is being done by women. One of the Swahili nicknames for wife among my friends, they don't use it anymore, but they said they used to, was my wife is my donkey. She's the burden bearer. She carries all the heavy water. She carries all the stones. Men don't do that. We don't demean ourselves because the woman is the burden bearer. Now, some of this even goes back to it was Eve's fault for the fall of man. I'm not kidding you. They go back and say, you know, and that kind of stuff is just so wrong from so many ways, so shaming, and it's so hopeless to say, you mean I'm bad because of Eve? Well, we all have the human nature, which is bad enough, right? And all of us, we're just all a bunch of broken people doing the best we can, hopefully. But they're loving it, let me put it that way. I am not aware after training after this movement has trained tens of thousands of men, I'm not aware of about three or four places where the man went back, married another woman, or went back to being his wife, and those couples split up. Because when you have to do all of the childcare, you have to do all of the cooking, you have to do all of the farming. A lot of them have 1 to 2 to 3 acre lots. And provide all the food to go on the table, and the man comes home late at 11 o'clock after drinking and demands hot food on his table and beats his wife. When that man comes home and he apologizes and says, I'll never do that again, and he doesn't. And when he starts helping with the farming, or maybe even taking a leadership role, when he starts carrying water, these are cultural norms. These are taboos that they're breaking. We don't tell them to go out and carry water. But they're free to be a man, and they look at their bodies. Wait a minute. Why is my wife's neck and back all twisted when carrying these 75-pound loads on top of their head? And it's just beautiful. It's almost like the garden in some ways, how happy these women are. And I've actually got a couple of videos of women that made a video, didn't even ask them, made a video about how their husband's a new man. And of course, we're capturing that with the surveys also.
So they go from being beat to not being beat because of this program.
Yeah.
So the men are taught to show love versus this craziness, being beat. So do they beat the girl, the little girl, and not the little boys?
No. There's no discrimination. If the kids get in the way, they're going to whack them. Today.
Mm-hmm.
The kids are afraid of their. As a matter of fact, I've had several men come up and talk to me. Said, you know, I thought being a real man was if my kids were terrified of me.
Wow.
I had a mean look, and if they knew that if they dare talk to me, they were going to get a backhand. That was the norm in these families.
through your program at Norman.
It's been amazing, Paulette, just to watch this happen. It's been such a joy. So, you know, at its core, when you can engage the Spirit of God to get into the spirit of broken people, good things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just creating. It's like, you know, you got to turn the soil. You got to put nutrition in the soil. You got to put organic. You got to do organic farming and put in a compost, and you turn that soil long enough, and you know, and now you've got this dark brown loamy soil that even smells good, and you put those same seeds in there, and you watch them grow, and so the power of the environment allows us as people to bloom into what God has designed for us to be, and it's. You know, those aren't, there's no guarantees in life. We know that.
Right.
We've had, give an example of the way the society, see, this has to transform the society. But it does happen one man at a time. I mean, that's our space. That's our,
mm-hmm.
our backyard. And then the man does the work of transforming his family by just being a kind, good, hardworking man. And they don't have role models for this, so they're setting their role models for their kids, and it's beautiful to see.
Well, I bet. And just all that friction that was once there to go away or dissipate is a miracle.
It is a miracle.
And you're doing all of this through your program, using God's word, or... What tools are you using to achieve those types of goals?
Thanks for asking. There's three courses. The first one is the Warrior. And the outcome of the Warrior course, and by the way, all three courses are called Core 300 Leadership. We call it Transformational Leadership. And all three courses build into the course before it. And they start out as an individual, that basically they start out as a Gideon, right? I mean, we don't use that term, but they're Gideon. They're alone.
Right.
They're hiding. They feel they're qualified. They don't feel that God's going to give them anything. They don't feel no one's going to give them a break. They're, a lot of them feel cursed, which is a big deal back there, by the way, because of all the different spiritualism that's been there for many years. But the outcome of that first course is that you get a man who's alone, hiding, and disqualified. When he graduates, he's in a group of a total of three men, and they love each other, and they exchange cell numbers, and they're going to stay in each other's lives and pray for each other each week and text each other each week in perpetuity, stay in touch. And then the other outcome is that they now know how to understand their own demons, so to speak, the temptations that they have. They've had the big thing is the father wound. And so we walk them through a ceremony. There's several ceremonies. One of the ceremonies is to set up an altar of prayer in their own home where the kids and mama can see you go each day. So that's where daddy goes and he prays. We give them a stone and they start a new habit. another ceremony is we anoint them with oil. And they receive, and there's an official ceremony where they receive Father God's legal adoption in the spirit. Because the scripture says that God has now given us, he's adopted us through the spirit of adoption. We are no longer slaves to our own passions, but we are now sons and daughters to our Father. That adoption heals. And for most cases, it heals the hole in their heart from the father wound.
Wow.
And these are, you know, ceremonies are important to focus on, and there's several of them that go on. At the end, of course, they get the certificate, of which they're very, very proud to. And then there's a graduation ceremony that happens where they bring all the family together, and the children and the wives and the grandparents tell stories about how their man is a new man. And they do it with 100 or so people, and they're eating, and that's a ceremony too. That's quite beautiful.
Yeah. Well, that's
right now. Here's. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say it sounds fantastic, and you give credit to God for the transformation.
Of course.
That's what I'm picking up from you, and then have that kind of unity. It's like, wow. You're familiar with different prison programs and things like that. What do you think?
I really like the program, because basically it's definitely, we can easily see that it's parallel to exactly what's going on in the world today. When he says specific system and all these different systems with gangsters, political, all of them are systems, and all of them are full of men that are damaged cargo. And this is just a fantastic program that utilizes basically nothing but scripture, and that this was revealed to him as a mechanism to be able to cause healing. I see it as a fantastic program amongst especially Los Angeles, where we see so much hatred. And as he said before, it's impossible. I have seen none of them. I belong to many organizations for gangsters, probation, all of these different kinds of things, where they try to find sound reasoning as to how they can get them to just stop it, cut this stuff out, and it does not work. All of a piece of this program where there's no intention of this stuff doing this, but it definitely correlates as to when you have men in Kenya, Uganda, and they regularly beat their wives, and the systemic damage that it does to these women is the same stuff we're seeing on the ground in the concrete in the cities. Because these women willingly allow this stuff to happen, and they think this is a part of life. And what it does to children is exactly what social workers, MSWs, are facing, and they have no idea how to deal with it. And this
that's probably the most articulate thing I've heard someone so acutely just communicate about what the problem is. If you have fatherless men make fatherless children, that's the problem. And if you,
well,
if
we
the
know
father
this is isn't generational, but this is a method that you found a magic wand to at least begin to make an approach to the problem. This is medicine in a bottle.
Yeah, well, it is, and it's a gift from God to anyone who wants to use it. But, you have to get certified, all that kind of stuff, because you want to be competent in it, and you also have to have your own story, right?
Right.
The men who teach this, when they teach it and they use an illustration, it's how they were and how they were changed by God.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, these guys, they said, my name is Wycliffe Mudavadi, and I was a monster, and my family had secretly packed their bags, 8 children, and my wife couldn't live with me anymore. And that one day, I went to that conference, and after 3 days came home, and I knelt before them and begged them to not leave. And here's what the kid said. The next morning, he woke up, and they had this smiling dad who was always mean and angry. He was very violent. And they go, excuse me, sir, you look like my daddy, but my daddy is a monster. Do you know where he's gone? It's just hysterical.
Wow.
That became a running joke for them. So I just don't know how to get from where we are to where you are, my friends, if just got to start a conversation, right?
Yeah. Well, that's a piece of it. And also, we'd like to know more about your holistic medicine. Exactly what is that?
Well, what I said was, once you see transformation happen on the inside, then the person is open to self-heal. They're open to nurture those around them because they're so caught up with their own imprisonment that they, you know, we all know about Maslow's triangle, right? When someone becomes whole inside, deep inside, then wholeness begins to move from organ into their heart, into their skin, into their words, into their expressions, into their body, kinetic body activity. And so in Africa, they, the men in particular, won't listen to basic 21st century farming practices. They won't do it. Now, the women will do it, but then, you know, it takes follow-up, and the men are not behind the woman there. And so once a man's mind is freed from his own prison, when he's no longer terrorized by himself and by his woundedness and by whatever demons that might be playing in his backyard, then he has the ability to stand strong in his own skin. And that's where the warrior course ends. Now, the next course is called the priest. The priest course teaches them the skill set and the heart of servant leadership, which begins with humility and serving others. We pattern after Jesus. And the priesthood of the man is that he's there to serve as a leader. He's a student leader. He's the protector. He's not the perpetrator anymore. He's the protector. He's a provider. And he's praying over and he's serving his family. That's the most glorious place a man can hold in life, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And then he trains there and he learns the skills. He learns to, you know, in practice, curb his temper. He learns to reject violence as a means to get things done. He becomes a better listener. We teach all those skills in that. To listen is to love. And then the next course is called the King. Now, in the King course, it's where I now can take those servant leadership skills and I can begin developing other men, younger boys, including my own, but I can develop other men so that they can. So now I'm bringing men back to the warrior course, but I'm also taking it to my business, because the servant leaders, from a business side, the most successful workers in an organization are those that serve better than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Servanthood and looking for where can I help without trying to get credit for it, where can I make our team stronger, is the quality that was clearly defined in the book Good to Great. It was a big surprise to Jim Collins, who was the researcher. He expected that, you know, that the top businesses in the world that were not just good businesses, they were great businesses, were led by dynamic, you know, like inferno men who were just so charismatic and smart and all that stuff, but he found it not to be true. All of the great companies he studied, and these are all Fortune 500 companies, had one thing in common at the top. The CEO, male or female, was humble first and encouraged his direct reports to excel him. That's servant leadership. That's great leadership. And when you see it, and it's pretty rare, it's beautiful. And that when a man gets to that place, and believe me, there are so many so many programs, and I get asked this question, it might be on some of your minds, but hello?
Yeah, I need something right now.
Yeah, actually, I'm only down to one more minute. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, let me go ahead and wrap it up a little bit here. Are there any questions from anyone else that's on the line? Because there's quite a few people that called in. I know you're listening, expert, Art, how do you say your last name, Hova? Hova?
Okay, so here's my email address. My email address is art, A-R-T, at core300, C-O-R-E, 300.org.
Okay, and he's also going to be a part of the 24th conference, Fathers and Family Coalition of America, this coming April 24th through the 27th. He's one of the speakers. You have several workshops. Am I correct to say that?
Yeah, actually, I've got a 90-minute workshop on the morning of the 24th. I think it goes from like 10 to 11:30, and then I have another workshop the same day on the 24th in the early afternoon.
Yes, and the conference is going to be at the Hilton Los Angeles at 5711 West Century Boulevard. So if you want to be a part of it, you can always call Dr. James Rodriguez. His phone number is 424-225-1323. Again, 424-225-1323. I know a lot of things are filling up because we're getting closer to deadlines and things like that. So if you want to be a part of this great, great convention, and people are coming from various countries to be there and to hear people like Art Hova and others. Are you a vendor? What do you call it? A vendor also, or no?
Yeah, yeah. There's going to be a table there, and one of us will be there all the time. We'll have some of our materials that you can take a look at, in some cases to buy. But
yeah.
If you want a link to this thing, I gave you my email to make it easy. Just send me an email if you want a link to the FFCA conference. I can send you a registration and forward it on to them.
Yes.
As well.
Because he has several books, or more than several. It's my understanding you have about 5 books or something like that.
Yeah, the main men's book I wrote, the title is Called to War. And it calls a man to look in the mirror and identify his enemies, the world, the flesh, and the devil, and then start putting on the armor of God and gain victory, along with 2 other guys.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the book. And then, of course, is of the warrior, the priest, and the king. You can see all of those at our website, core300.org. And please, if you do have any connection or anyone who that you think is trustworthy, that is really interested in a new solution, I'd love to talk to them.
Okay. Okay, that wraps it up. Are there any other questions for some of the ones that I can see your number up here on this board? Really listening, which is a good thing, too.
That's great.
But if you have any questions, you're welcome to still go ahead and ask the questions. And Art Hova is right here. He can answer them for you. If not, we'll be on the next Tuesday again, and we'll have another a couple of speakers come on. This is American Health Crisis, Blog Talk Radio. I'm Paulette Young, and it's been a pleasure listening to you. Transforming lives. Great. I got to tell some of people that I am connected to the greatness that you're doing.
Praise God.
It's not, and hopefully this continues on and a lot of this will be picked up. You said you already go into some of the churches here in California, which is a good thing.
No, we're not. We are up to our ears and alligators in the growth in Kenya and Uganda, and that's where I'm assigned, but I want to get something started here. I'd love to.
Oh, it's much needed. It's, we have a broken health system from COVID, the doctors will say. So many things have taken place. And I know it's very important not to lose your hope, still believe that God can do something. But we have to do our parts too. And to hear about this transformation with these women and men, and I didn't know that Los Angeles or California, known that, you know, men beat you, and it's also known that women learn to beat them back.
I know.
They'll even kill. So it sounds like Kenya is different, almost like they're beat down from the beginning when they're small children. Am I correct?
Yeah, but I tell you right now, 7 out of 10 homes in Kenya do not have a father present. 7 out of 10, that's double of any other nation in the world. So there's a lot of work to be done here.
Yeah.
Part of it was
because of culture?
No, it's a combination. It's because of a combination of things. One of the main things is that men have been driven away from their homes as men. They're such a feeble shell as a man because the Kenyan government has accepted grants since 2004 when the United Nations instituted that every nation had to have a Department of Gender Affairs. And the Gender Affairs edict by the United Nations said it had to have equal men and women of goodwill working at the table because it was not just a woman's problem, it was a human problem. And none of the nations did that. And then the NGOs went and they funded hundreds of millions of dollars, about $450 million alone in Kenya, given under Barack Obama, and much of that also given by the Gates Foundation. And they would lose all of the money from the grant with penalties if the audit showed that $1 went to any male of the species over 4 years old. These are fixed parameters that are destroying men and keeping them. This is healthcare. This is education. And so very few Kenyan boys go to school anymore because there's no money for them. And the girls get special education, special classes, you know, critical thinking in the fourth grade, and the boys are only allowed to go out and kick a soccer ball around. It's been a horrible, horrible nightmare for boys and men. And they've lost their will, and they're wandering around. And so that's one of the main reasons why that's where my heart is that can be turned around. And we've got some momentum
to do it. Okay,
tell
me something. It wasn't always like that. Am I correct?
No, it started in 2004 with the initiative. And by the way, a lot of the things the government starts that come out of it from really good intention. But it can get weaponized as a woman's rights thing, and then the men aren't allowed to participate. So women can get free money for startups, men can't. Women can get special health care, men can't. Boys are excluded from afternoon education in all of the schools in Kenya. It's all funded for girls only. They get special books. They have special classes, special lectures. The boys play soccer. And they are excluded. And it's done intentionally by the NGOs the way that they're writing the grants. And they think they're doing something righteous, but they're messing with common decency. And gosh, you know, these victimizers, the men that are victimizers, they're victims too. And not because of money. They're victims. They were fatherless also.
Come here. The same thing is going on with the same kind of programs that they started many years ago, such as AFDC, whereas they put certain kinds of money there. At the same time, if a man is homeless on the street, he gets nothing. And the same system, I don't care what you call it, you know, the men are prisonalized and isolated, and they just don't care. And so the saints
talk
about
absolutely
the parallel system. Yeah, it just has different names, but it's a parallel system.
Yep. It is. It is. And I believe at its source, it's demonic inspired.
Well,
I
we
would
all
agree.
Know that's what that is, total destruction.
Yeah. And it sure ain't working.
Hey, if you take the man, you take the king. Are we playing chess or what?
That's right. That's right.
Okay,
build
I'm
up the
going
man,
to
you put up with him.
And in the program, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank
you.
You this
gave a
fun.
Lot of information.
You guys
can't wait
great.
To see
Thanks
you at the
listening.
Conference. Go ahead. I'm
yes.
sorry.
And pray
yes.
for us.
Oh, definitely. We'll pray, and I'll have others pray also.
Oh, thank you, Paulette.
Okay.
Yes,
well, thank you. We got it together, right. even though I missed the party.
We're going to have a good conference.
My family was disappointed in me, but I told them I have to. I mean, I didn't have to, but it's just, you know, I wanted to also. Okay, so we'll talk again. All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.